This goes out to the AVS fam, to the crew getting ready at the Pepsi can. DJ Triple T banging thunder with the high jams. My dog Bernie Yan smiles in the West Stands.
The ColoradoHockey.com podcast is brought to you by FSFAM.com, AVSFAM.com.
This is the second in a series of podcasts that we're calling The Goalie Situation. And in this podcast, we get to meet Kat Silverman, who is a fantastic person and a great hockey mind. We start off the conversation by her explaining who she is and what she does.
So I'm Kat Silverman. This year, I'm commissioned with the Athletic NHL. I do most of my work with the Athletic Chicago. They actually approached me at the start of the season, said, hey, we're looking to do something new this year where we take a deeper dive into Corey Crawford because he's super underrated. You know, he's one of those goalies around the league that gets sort of dismissed. He's like, oh, he's behind a really great team. And their media said, you know, the team in front of him has been weakening each year. And it has, you know, they run out of cap space. They have to deal away someone good. Their players get older. They still have him under contract. Brent Seabrook's not that great anymore. Costs them a boatload of money. They said, we want to look at how Crawford is sort of hashtag actually good. We want to see what makes him one of the league's better guys. And they're a team that doesn't let their assistant coaches talk. So you don't get access to their goalie coaches. You don't get access to their assistant coaches. And Crawford's not a super prolific guy in interviews. He doesn't love to talk. So they said, you know, we don't really have a lot of, for lack of a better term, we don't have a lot of background info on it. Would you be willing to do a weekly thing for us looking at the Blackhawks? And then you can look at other teams throughout the year as well. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. I'm definitely fine doing that. So it's kind of a new thing for me. Mostly I do stuff for In Goal. That's where I know Claire. I do a lot of their mask work. I love looking at the stories behind the masks. I used to work for the Arizona Coyotes in their Department of Hockey Development. I would go around to schools, sort of teach kids how to play hockey, work at clinics with some of the players, you know, teaching kids the fundamentals of how to play, sort of the basic coaching stuff. Obviously I had to stop doing that when I had my daughter about a year and a half ago. It's kind of hard to be on the ice, leave a baby sort of sitting on the sidelines. She's not super good for that. But yeah, so I'm just online. I don't really do any coaching anymore. But yeah, that's where you can find most of my stuff. I do stuff for Mile High Hockey, which is the SB Nation Avalanche site, because I'm good buddies with their editor. His daughter and my daughter are the same age. So we go way back. So I help out there. But I am not traditionally Avs media, for lack of a better term. They're a team that I haven't followed as closely before this year. So it's been kind of fun watching them, too.
Yeah, I mean, all they could do is get better. I suppose they were that far back. But I think it's awesome you're not an Avs fan. That's actually what I'm looking for, is I want somebody who's not just going to agree with what I say or be so rosy. And in particular, it has to do with the goalies, which we've talked about a little bit. And it seems like you've done your history on a couple of them. I mean, Varlamov and Pickard, but also Bernier. And I know that Pickard's not around anymore, but he kind of is to me. I was bummed.
You were bummed about the Pickard thing? Honestly, he's one of the goalies that I got to talk to last year because I'm based out of Phoenix. Whenever a team passes through Phoenix that we don't get more than once a season, I try to catch that game up in the press box, try and talk to their goalie, even if there's not really a story there at that point in time, just so I can get some quotes, so I can get sort of in their head a little bit. So if I do need to write on them, I have some of that background. And when they came through town last year was when Varlamov was injured. And that seems to happen to me. You know, this year, last night I was at the Panthers game. Luongo, I've been waiting to talk to him for 3 years now. He's out injured. So Reimer was super fun to talk to, too, though. But so I got to talk to Pickard, and he's a really smart dude. And he didn't sound like he was playing behind a team that just could not win to save their lives. He sounded like a goalie that was in the midst of a very intense learning experience. You know, he sounded like he was almost like in a lose-lose flight simulator, but that he knew that there was something good coming after that. He didn't sound super frustrated. He just sounded like it was a learning experience for him. And I was like, this is a guy that, you know, when the season's over, this could be their starter moving forward. And then he went to Vegas and I was like, whoops. But no, he was super fun. And but he's been replaced by one of my full disclosure, I'm a huge Jonathan Bernier fan. I've been a Bernier apologist for like 5 or 6 years now. He's a ton of fun. A little on the mental side of the game, sometimes I think he can lose himself a little bit, but he's got a really good foundation to work with. So when he came in, it was a best case scenario, I thought.
When he came in, everyone was like, yes, this is awesome. This is perfect. And they seem to have made an agreement with him like, hey, look, you're going to be the backup. You might play a little bit more than the backup would typically, but that's your role. And at that role, I think he's pretty good. I really do. But like you're saying, I think every goal is mental, by the way. I think it's a requirement, or the best ones are anyways. But I think that with him, I haven't seen enough of his game to really know, because a lot of the times when he's getting scored on, it's either a weird fluky thing or it's just a complete and total meltdown by the Avs. So, I mean, how do you weigh that when you're trying to kind of put a measure on a goalie is where I stand with him right now. But this all leads up to eventually I'm trying to figure out, do the Avs have a solution and goal beyond this year, next year, depending on if Farley is traded or if we re-sign him or what happens there. So that's my context on it. But Bernier, I mean, I'm not disappointed with him, but do you think he's ever going to be a starter?
So he's kind of a unique case, because I made a really strong case for him being the starter in Toronto. Like, ironically enough, I got to talk to their other tandem starter last night, which was James Reimer, obviously. And Reimer and Bernier were put in the biggest lose-lose situation in the NHL outside of Edmonton for like a good solid 4 years there. They were behind a team that couldn't hold on to the puck. They bled shots. They, like you were saying, where Bernier lets in goals on a complete Avs meltdown. That was sometimes every night for Toronto. You know, watching them for, I want to say like the 2014-15 and 15-16 seasons was miserable. They were so bad. And I actually stopped watching some of their games because like the Oilers would be bad, but it would be a funny bad. They would, like there was one game where the Oilers played shorthanded completely by accident for like a good solid 30 seconds. And it was like a comedy of errors. And that wasn't Toronto. They were just bad. And I think that was really hard on Bernier. And it was hard on Reimer. But Reimer, like last night, and I mentioned it in this long piece that I wrote about him last night, he's always smiling. Reimer's like the happiest dude I've ever met in my life. He was laughing about everything. The Panthers are on a really tough road trip. He just lost his starter. He's still smiling. He's like, he's just constantly all about the sunny skies. And I think Bernier's a little bit more internalized. It's not that he's a crabby dude. He's just not quite as unflinchingly optimistic as Reimer is. And so I think that period with the Leafs hit him harder than it hit Reimer. And, you know, I almost think that sometimes when the Avs have those defensive meltdowns, it affects him because he's used to it and he's like, ah, not again. But when the team's playing even just passably in front of him, he's got a very good technical foundation. So as long as they're playing passably well, I think he does just fine. And even if he moves up to a tandem starter role, which I think is more or less what Varlamov's going to need over the next few years, I think as long as he has a passable team in front of him, he can hold a 1B role. He can play 30 or 40 games a season, no problem.
So where do you get the idea that there's going to be a tandem role?
So it's sort of a twofold thing for me. I think that Varlamov, from a physical standpoint, plays the game in a way that doesn't necessarily lend itself to him having the longest lifespan in net. And you kind of, you know, before we agreed to do this, you kind of mentioned that you were curious about the lifespan of goaltenders. And I think depending on play style, that can change. You see guys like Roberto Luongo, Ed Belfour back when he was with Chicago. These guys play for, you know, 15, 20, almost 25 years sometimes in net. Varlamov doesn't play the same style as them. He drops early. He's got a very wide butterfly. His game is very hard on his groin and his hips. And anyone who's done anything, either goaltending, if you're a competitive runner, if you're in a sport that's very aggressively hard on your hips and groin, you know that if you do stuff that puts extra strain on those, your athletic lifespan shortens. And so I think that he shouldn't be playing more than at most 50 to 55 games a season, which obviously leaves 25 to 35, give or take, for his backup. And if Bernier is playing well, I think there's no reason not to give him those games, because obviously the fewer you give Varlamov, the longer you have him in net. And you want to preserve a career like his, because he is very good. So if you try to push him to those 60 or 70 games a season, you run the risk of burning him out earlier. And I don't know why the Avs would do that if they have a good guy playing a number two.
Yeah, I've been kind of playing with that idea. And I mean, regardless of what the Avs do, I was wondering, like, does Varley require that many games to be in the zone to have his kind of flow state? Or can he play fewer games and still have the mental edge and kind of the focus? Because when he's on, he's really on. But Varley, like any other goalie, I mean, when he gets off too, he gets a little mental. Suddenly things are going in that shouldn't. He's off just a little bit on his angles. I mean, all those things are true. But I don't know. It's really interesting when you talk about the style of playing in. Because I know that Varley's been taking on some new stuff, especially the off-ice exercise with his new goaltending coach, or same coach, but new to the Avs. And you talked about it a little bit with the yoga and mobility and things like that. And, you know, I have to think that's going to make the shelf life of Varley longer. But I worry at the same time, like, supposing he is healthy, I mean, he proves himself to not be an injury risk past this year or the next. He's still getting older and he's probably looking for a sunset contract. So I'm trying to figure out if that plays into what the Avs are doing right now. And that's really the catalyst of how I got down this road in the first place. But when it comes to his coach, do you know anything about him?
I know a little bit. I know that he's been working with him since he played back in Russia. I know that he lets Varley sort of do his thing a little bit. And I haven't heard a ton about him since he came over to North America. The goalie coaches that I talk to most frequently, I haven't necessarily asked them about him yet, but I know that he obviously wants to see Varlamov succeed. And Varlamov never comes back from his off season in a completely different place, so to speak. And he's been playing with one of the Allaire brothers for years. And you know, if he was coming back every season with the work that Allaire had done undone over the summer, then I would be a little worried about bringing in, you know, his old coach and, you know, having him maybe take some steps to undo stuff, which if you see a goaltending coach doing too much to change a goalie's style, I think it can sort of throw them off. But I think he's working with what Varley has already built in Colorado. So we shouldn't see too many changes, I think, other than sort of trying to establish that consistency, trying to establish that health consistency off the ice. Because part of the problem, I think, is we see Varlamov melt down a bit when his play looks like he's trying to be a little ginger. So I don't know if he, you know, tweaks something and then ends up playing much more, I guess, cautiously and ends up, you know, throwing off his game or whatever the case may be. But I think if he gets the health there, that should lead to the confidence and the consistency. And I don't think he necessarily needs multiple games. I think he needs consistency with shots. And that's, you know, I've had a couple different goalies around the league talk about this, whether it's a game where they faced 15 shots or it's a game that they faced 45 shots. Both of those are the wrong ends of the spectrum. You don't want to be only facing 15 or 16 shots throughout a game, because you don't get a chance to really get yourself going, really get yourself in a rhythm, figure out your angles against the team that you're playing, because every team plays a little differently. And so if the team's giving him the chance to see, you know, 25, 28, maybe 30 tops shots per night, I think he should do just fine, because that gives him a chance to really, you know, get himself set, get his consistency. You were saying when he's in the zone, he really is in the zone. He does a really good job of, once he figures a team out, he just locks in. His depth is great. His reaction's great. I just think he needs a little bit of consistency in front of him and the confidence to know that he's not going to hurt himself.
Catch you. Okay, I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit because I go down rabbit holes easily. Everything you're saying is really interesting to me, but I definitely need to get you to talk about the pipeline a little bit. And you kind of know where I'm coming from with this, but when you look at it too, I mean, people like Retro Berra, I mean, any of the goaltenders I can think of in recent history, is just, it seems like they almost don't value that position as much as they value the other positions. And they feel like maybe they can spend less on a goalie if they work more on the forwards and the defense. And I don't know if any of this is right. This is just me guessing, but also me kind of exploring this idea with you. So right now, if I look at the pipeline, and my assumption and talking to other people is that when you draft a goaltender, you're looking at least 5 years before they're an NHL starter, and probably that's their rookie season, or at least that's the expectation. I mean, there's some people like Fleury who came in and it was a complete different story, but that's the exception there too, I think. So if we have somebody like a Spencer Martin, who I believe is 5th year since we've drafted him, will be next year, I just don't see him as the starter either. I mean, he's fun to watch. He's crazy on the ice. He has all these little like routines and superstitions. But when it comes to being like a legit starter goalie for a team that's finally getting their stuff together on defense and maybe even on offense, I worry a bit. So you mentioned some names that I'd forgotten about. Joe Cantina, I think is how you say his name. And a few others. But what do you see when you look down the pipeline as far as who our next goalie is and then the one after that and the way the Avs are dealing with it with their drafts?
So to start, I don't necessarily think that they don't value the goaltending position, but I will say that I don't know if we can evaluate how they value the position, so to speak, for another year or two until we see how the team addresses the position completely removed from Patrick Waugh. And I'm sure that somebody listening to this is going to get real upset with me for this. And I apologize in advance, but Patrick Waugh, very, very good in net. He's one of the best in the game all time. And that's, you know, you don't, even if you don't think he's the best, he's one of the best. And that's not up for debate. But like when Wayne Gretzky was head coach for the Phoenix Coyotes at the time, he made it very apparent that being the best does not necessarily mean that you are the best teacher. And I think that from what I've heard from guys in the past, Patrick Waugh is not the easiest guy to live up to expectations for. One of the guys who used to be the backups for the Arizona Coyotes, he's now in the Tampa Bay system, Louis Domingue. He sort of went off a little bit. I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, talking about how when he was a starter for Patrick Waugh, he made it to the, I want to say it was either the Memorial Cup or the QMJHL championship, and his team lost to Nathan MacKinnon's team. And he said that Waugh completely threw him under the bus. And he said that he was constantly critical of his play, was constantly holding him to a higher standard than his skaters. And you can kind of see where that would come from, because Patrick Waugh was the guy who carried his teams every once in a while. And so he may hold his goaltenders to a similar expectation, to expect them to be him. And he said that he had hoped that he would, you know, get to learn from a legend, and that it actually just made him lose confidence in himself. He didn't get a lot of advice. He didn't get a lot of support, and he really didn't enjoy playing under him. So I don't know if maybe Patrick Waugh was a little too hard on goaltending prospects in the pipeline. If, you know, it's not that they didn't value the position, it's that they, nobody was ever quite good enough for him. And that's purely speculation. You know, we'll see as he's removed from the team by 1 year, 2 year, 3 years down the road, how they approach the position. But it was an area of weakness, particularly during the era where he and Joe Sakic were in charge. And I think that Joe Cannata, who's the guy that they brought in this year, is a little bit more NHL ready than Spencer Martin based on what I'd seen in the past. He's not having a super great year this year, but he's only gotten to play in 2 games in the AHL because there's a very crowded pipeline right now. Obviously, the San Antonio Rampage have been, they've been taking in some players from the St. Louis Blues pipeline because they no longer have an AHL team. I don't know how I feel about Spencer Martin's game. He's, like you said, he's got some quirks. He does some crazy things. I don't know how good his technical foundation is. I was concerned when I watched some of his preseason games. If he is NHL capable, I think it's still a few years away. They may want to look elsewhere. They have done a pretty good job of drafting in terms of frequency goaltenders. I know that I mentioned this last night. They drafted one in 2017, the fourth round, Peter Kvaka. He's out of the Czech juniors. Adam Werner out of Sweden in 2016. Maximilian Pajpak, I believe is how you say it, out of Slovakia in 2014. Obviously, Spencer Martin, 2013. Then they had Calvin Pickard in 2010. So they've drafted a decent number of players, you know. The Los Angeles Kings only drafted like three guys in a 7 or 8 year span, and their pipeline is now completely depleted as a result. The Avs have a ton in their drafted pipeline, but they're drafting them from weird places. They're drafting them from the Czech juniors. They're drafting them from Slovakia. And maybe they're hoping that having all of these different goaltending styles, one of them will pan out, but they're not drafting guys that they can keep a close eye on. You know, they haven't drafted anyone out of the OHL, out of the USHL, out of the NCAA, out of the NAHL. They haven't drafted any of those guys in 5 years now and counting. And I think that's a little weird. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how things are going to go now that Waugh is gone, how they're going to start approaching that position, but it is. The guys that they have in the system right now are very hit or miss. They have the volume. They just don't necessarily have anybody in there that I look at and I'm like, oh, he's a top ranked prospect. You know, he's going to make it far. So they may have to start looking in free agency soon just to fill in the pipeline if those guys don't pan out.
I'm so glad you went there because that was my next question.
Free agency?
Yeah. What can you expect with that?
You know, over the next few years, I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think that, obviously we've seen in the last few transactions made by Sakic since Patrick Waugh left, I think we all sort of got the impression that maybe some of their less desirable free agent decisions weren't being made by the GM. They were being made by the head coach. So I think I have a decent amount of confidence in Sakic and the scouts and his advisors in making good decisions. So that's actually something that I was going to mention when we were talking about Varlamov, is I think they're going to hold on to him for now, but constantly keep an eye on that free agency market, see who looks like maybe their team's not going to hold on to them. You know, is Brian Elliott going to stay in Philadelphia for a long time, or is he going to grow sick of the team that he's playing behind? What about Michel Neuwirth? He's playing behind him there right now. He's obviously spent some time with Varlamov in the past. He could come in. You know, we don't know. Will Ryan Miller stay in Anaheim through the end of his career? He only signed a 2-year deal and he's looking like the ageless wonder. He could play for another 5 or 6 years. I think he's really adapted his style and has become one of the league's more versatile goaltenders. I think he's got more life in him. You know, there are probably anywhere between 5 and 10 guys that are already in the NHL that I think the team could keep an eye on. Then I think there are a decent number of prospects. Garrett Sparks. I don't know if Calvin Pickard will ever come back to Colorado, but there's both Sparks and Pickard in the AHL system in Toronto. They have a wonderful goalie coach there in their AHL system. Both of them are doing really well right now. I don't know if they can keep both of them beyond this year. So, you know, if you can't bring Pickard back in, look at bringing Sparks in, see if he can be a number three. Then there are a couple prospects around the league. You know, there are a decent number of players that I think they're going to keep an eye on because, like I said, I don't know how these prospects are going to pan out. But other teams have done a very good job of stockpiling players. So even, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets, they have Eric Comrie, they have Michael Hutchinson, they have Steve Mason, they have Connor Hellebuyck. That's four guys with NHL caliber talent. Two of those are going to have to go. The Avs could take advantage of someone like that.
So if you're drafting, when do you start looking goalie? I mean, probably not first round, probably not high, unless it's just an out of this world guy that you have complete faith in. So at what point in a draft do you start thinking we're going to look at goalies at this point?
You know, I think every year it depends on your draft position, because there are 30 first round picks. Of the top 30 players in each draft class, I think one or two are probably goaltenders. Just like, you know, when you look at a team, you have it sort of matches your team's ratio. You have 23 players on your active roster, two of them are goaltenders. One or two top guys are going to be goalies. Depending on where they fall, you probably have, you know, a 1 in 30 chance of needing to pick that guy. But my sweet spot is middle second to third round. I think that's when if you haven't picked a goaltender in a year or two, you need to pick a guy in that range. You need to pick a guy who's got starter experience for his junior, his college, whatever the case may be, his club. A guy whose goaltending coach you trust, you don't think is going to undo the work he's got going on right now, and who you think fits the style that your team is playing and the style of the prospects that you're bringing in. Because there are some guys that look good, but maybe don't play as well behind the system that you're building. You know, you can always pick a guy in the sixth or seventh round, but those are going to be the guys that the Avalanche have been picking recently. They're going to be those long shots. So if you only pick sixth or seventh round goalies, you'd better have a really good scout looking at the free agent market, because you've left yourself in a vulnerable position.
Yeah, and those late rounds always seem like European guys too, which the Avs seem to love.
They do, and that's, you know, for a while there, European goalies were looking better than North American goalies, because American goalies hadn't quite caught up yet, and Canadian goalies were on the downtrend. I talked with the Coyotes goalie coach, John Elkin, about it for a little bit. They became so rigid in Canada for a while. You know, they were getting guys on the ice all year, and then they were doing goalie camps in the summer, so there was no break. There was no cross training. It was just practice, practice, practice from like age 8 on. So good guys were burning out at like 15, 16. And Europe wasn't doing that. They were looking at incorporating yoga. They were using cross training. They were teaching guys how to get out there and run and then get back into goal. But American goalies, I think, have now surpassed both of those, the Canadians and the Europeans. I think American and Russian goalies are where it's at right now. And the Avalanche have neither of those. So you know, they haven't picked a single Russian goalie. Varlamov, they obviously have as their starter, but they have no prospects. And they have, to the best of my knowledge, no American goalies, unless Kanata's from Massachusetts. But other than that, they don't have any others. And that's a little weird to me, because they've been producing a lot of really good goalies lately. Connor Hellebuck's American. Corey Schneider's American. Ben Bishop is American. Jonathan Quick. You know, they're John Gibson. John Gibson's an American. Ryan Miller's an American. And the Avs are ignoring what I think is a market they should maybe be looking at and is very close to home for them. They're in America. So
as you were saying those, I was trying to remember like kind of the size of these guys. Do you think that a big goaltender is still the thing right now? It seems to me that you can get away with a smaller player these days. It's kind of the trend, right? Everybody wants to go find their Johnny Hockey. But when it comes to goaltenders, I just can't get away from this idea that 6'1" is actually not a big goaltender anymore. And if you're looking to draft somebody, maybe you lean towards that. Do you find that the size of a goaltender is relevant these days as far as prospects?
To an extent, you know, there have been one or two goalies recently that have been very good, but have stayed in the AHL and the ECHL for their career. And there's one who I'm going to get roasted by Engel for forgetting who it is, but he's 5'6". That's not an NHL goalie. It just isn't.
I think I know who you're talking about, but I can't spot the name.
Right. His name is out of my head. But 5'6", not an NHL goalie, no matter how you spin it. But these 6'8" guys, sometimes that works against them as well. You know, they reach too far, they overcompensate, they either play out too far for their size, or they hurt themselves too much, because dropping from 6'8" is obviously a little harder than dropping from 6 feet even. I think 6'1", 6'2" is actually a pretty good sweet spot for goalie height. But it's more about their talent. And for a while they were saying size, you got to pick the size. If you've got a guy who's 6'8", he can't track a puck and he doesn't know how to use post coverage correctly, he's going to be terrible. Whereas a guy who's 6'2", if he's playing his angles correctly, if he's squaring himself to the shooter, stopping the puck, why would you pick the 6'8" guy?
That's really interesting and a good point, actually. I hadn't quite framed it that way, but it makes good sense.
It's, you know, they always say you can't teach size, and you can't. You can't stretch these guys out to make them 6'8". But if you look back at the guys that have won the Stanley Cup over the last, I think it's been like the last 10 years, not counting backups, so like not counting Scott Darling, not counting Ilya Bryzgalov, the only guy to win a Stanley Cup who is over 6'2", give or take, is Matt Murray, and he's 6'4". He's the big guy to win recently. You know, Tuukka Rask is 6'1 or 6'2". Marc-Andre Fleury is 6'1 or 6'2". Jonathan Quick, 6' even. He's, you know, he's relatively short by goaltending standards. Corey Crawford's only 6'2". So this concept that you need to teach size, that you need to get these big guys, it's not what's winning the Stanley Cups. So
I love that you just know all that. I'm sure you're looking at something. If not, I'm even more impressed. But
I had to do it. I had to do it for when I was doing a thing on Crawford. Like I said, that's who I do this year. I looked back at every starting goaltender to win back to like Ken Dryden. And Tom Barrasso and Ken Dryden are really the only tall guys to win before essentially Matt Murray.
Well, that's such a different game back then too.
And they, back then, I mean, most of the guys were 5'10". That was like the average goaltending height. And I think that was like the average athlete height too. People are huge now. But yeah, I mean, you really don't find a ton of super huge guys in goal that are the best of the best. Henrik Lundqvist isn't 6'6". Carey Price isn't 6'6". It's about their skill level. So,
and a lot of it is mental. I know that's the popular thing to say, but you know, if you can visualize in your head in real time where all five guys are on the ice and be able to make your move based off of, you know, that guy's missing or the back door is going to be open, I think that some goalies don't think the game as fast as they move. And I think that's something that Nathan MacKinnon's learning as a forward too, is he's really fast, but sometimes fast isn't the game. I mean, you have to be able to think it fast and slow it down and get people out of position. So when it comes to goalies, that's one thing I think Barlamov has when he's on. I think that he has times too where he's just not, he's not keeping track of where the players are well enough.
And that's, you know, I think that's both a blessing and a curse for some goaltenders, because Jonathan Quick is, he's my pet peeve. He thinks the game incredibly well, and he is so fast. His reflexes are lightning fast, but his positioning is terrible. So he makes, you know, he makes these eye-catching saves where he throws himself from halfway across the ice and manages to stop the puck. He throws his leg out in a way that no other human being can, but he shouldn't have to do that. He so rarely just absorbs the puck with his chest. And so I think as he gets older, his game style will not work as well as someone like Henrik Lundqvist, who, you know, makes the saves look easy because he's always exactly where he needs to be. And Corey Crawford isn't as fast, but thinks the game well and is always right where he needs to be. So that's something that I've been kind of curious about with Varlamov, is trying to figure out, because he's sort of in the middle there. I can't really tell if he can slow his game down enough to not have to make some of the more athletic looking saves just to preserve his own body.
Well, and if you're going to be in the league for a long time, it's reasonable to think you're going to have to adjust your game, right? What got you there probably won't keep you there, is what I'm thinking. So for him, I don't know if his style is adaptable into something that is, one, more sustainable for his body and for his health, but also that makes him as relevant as he was before. And this is something you said earlier, the league average. I keep hearing that. And I had to look, but I wouldn't have guessed that he was, I mean, he's below league average at this point, I think.
Yes.
But, you know, when you get attached to a goaltender, especially as a fan, and that's all I am, I try not to be so, you know, a lot of the reporters I deal with and talk to and hang out with, they try really hard not to be a fan because they feel like it gets in the way of their reporting. I'm not that guy at all. I'm a huge fan, but I try to keep it real. When I saw those numbers, I was like, how is this possible? How is he not even league average at this point? And yet he seems so good. I mean, he's not, I mean, if you look at the record, I get that he's not that good, but I look at the team in front of him, how he's playing. And I think that sometimes I'm anchored by, you know, the really good year he had here, the same that Craig Anderson did. And, you know, the way that we had a guy come in, I don't know if you know who Kerfoot is or Gerard, but both of them came in, had like a week that was just amazing, a couple games that didn't suck. And now they've come down to earth a little bit, but because they came in so hot and it was so weird after the Duchene trade, like you have this idea that you almost judge them by their best and you don't pay attention to what their average is. So when it comes to goalies and league average, I mean, is that good league average? Because there's got to be a lot of them that are, right?
Well, so for save percentage, league average is part of what you're being deceived by is Varlamov. His numbers get pulled down by a few very bad games because he does. He has a few very bad games, but he, in terms of quality start percentage, I like looking at that. That basically tells you the percentage of games where he gives his team a 77% chance to win, which is the best you can ask for from your goaltender. And league average on that is about 53%. And last year he had a 0.898 save percentage, which is atrocious, but he almost hit 50% quality start percentage. He was at a 48%. So his consistency was good. He was, you know, staying right at league average throughout the season. He just didn't have a ton of those amazing games, and he had a few more of those really bad games. Whereas Mike Smith, he's another guy that, you know, fans love because he had one really great year and then his numbers started to drop off. His quality start percentage has remained below league average every year. He doesn't hit those league average numbers in terms of consistency. And so he's one that I would be more concerned about than Varlamov, because this year his quality start percentage is 55%. So he's above league average there. He's given the team a chance to win in 55% of the games. And he only has three really bad starts. They just happen to be very, very bad. So those are definitely his numbers down a little bit.
I have never heard anyone say those words before. Quality start percentage. Where do you even look that up?
Hockey Rec. It was created by Rob Volman. He does the Hockey Abstract. It basically, you get recorded as a quality start if you have a minimum save percentage of 0.917, which is the league average, or if you have I believe it's 0.887 save percentage, but you've only allowed two goals or fewer. So that's if, you know, if your team has only let you face 14 shots and you've allowed two, but you've been facing, you know, really inconsistent shots. So in theory, when you've only allowed two goals or you have a 917 save percentage, your team has a 77% chance of winning the game. So if you have, you know, 55% of your quality starts, but your team does not have 55% wins with you, that means that the team is doing something wrong, not you. And if your save percentage is lower than the league average, but your quality start percentage is higher than league average, you're playing consistently. You just don't have enough, like, 0.980 save percentage games to balance out the few poor games you've played.
That's blowing my mind. How have I never heard of this? This is a thing, right? Like everybody else knows, but me, evidently.
It's not used as often as I think it should be, because it, you know, and to be fair, when you have a very small sample size, like if you have a guy who's played in 10 games, his quality start percentage could be like 30% because he has such a small sample size to work with. But like one of the things that reassured me when the Coyotes picked up Antti Raanta this year was coming in from, he played with the Rangers, who have a very good goalie, concealing the facts that they have very bad defense. And the Blackhawks, his quality start percentage over his career is 0.632. So he's given his team a 77% chance to win in 63% of his games over his entire career. And so when they brought him in, I was like, that's who they need. That's the kind of guy that you want. And sure enough, he has a 59% quality start percentage this year. So even though the Coyotes aren't winning games, that gives you the indication that it's really not his fault.
So that's fascinating to me. I'm really big on this idea of having, I get advanced stats and I like them, but I also like kind of equations that give you sort of an 80-20 on something. And this seems like one of those where you could look at that and have a really good feeling about a goalie if you have a decent sample size. That's so interesting to me though, because this is going to be a rabbit hole, by the way. I've been trying to figure out, like, are you familiar with how Google Page Ranking works?
Give or take. I feel like Google changes their algorithm like every 3 weeks and you have to play catch up.
So they do, absolutely, a little bit. But the point of it being just the real simple point of you have a website and you have all these claims that you make about it with your keywords and your metadata and all that. But then they really kind of judge you by the people who link to you and the quality of those people. So stay with me here. My idea was that if you could put some sort of weight on the different players on the ice, we'll just say the Avs for this example, and then have, like, you know, if you have a defenseman who carries a heavy weight, who does he pass to the most? And what is the result of that pass? Is it another pass? Is it a goal or is it a turnover? So I have this theory that I can page rank the Avs if I can figure out my little equations for it. And so when you mentioned this with the goalies, it's just, that's kind of the aha moment for me, is that's something I need to look at and understand, because I'm really in the dark with goalies. I mean, I thought Pickard was great, but the Avs evidently didn't. They didn't feel like he needed to be protected, or maybe there's more to that story, but that's my little rant about algorithms. If you have any others, shoot them at me anytime.
Now, Pickard, I still don't really understand why they chose not to keep him, because his quality start percentage wasn't super great. But he also played in 50 games in his age 24 season, which that was, I didn't realize it until I took a look. That was a really bad team. Like, that was a really bad team. And I watched one or two of their games, and I'd sort of been hoping that they wouldn't do as well. Not actively rooting against them, but Patrick Waugh had been so smug when they made it to the playoffs. What was it, like 3 or 4 years ago? And everyone was telling him the team's shot rates aren't super high, their shooting percentage is way above league average, they're going to fall back to earth. And he was like, I know what I'm doing. And then sure enough, they didn't make the playoffs after that. And I was like, good, you know, keep doing that until they make a change. And then they did make a change. And so I was like, good, I can start rooting for them again, because they're trying to fix it. And then they really fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
And
I like how you have criteria too. Like, I can't root for them right now, but as soon as we got Bednar in, it seems like that changed your mind a bit.
I like him. He seems like he seemed like someone who was willing to listen to things. And that's, you know, I'm a Bruins fan. I come from a long family of Leafs fans. I have family members that worked for the Leafs in like the 50s and the 60s and had season tickets when they used to win Stanley Cups long before any of us were born. but I don't necessarily blindly cheer for teams anymore. I like to cheer for players that are doing well, and I like to cheer for good systems, and I like to cheer for teams that respect their goaltenders correctly, which obviously when Waugh was in charge, I couldn't necessarily do that with the Avs. But so
you're so invested though. I mean, you know, all this stuff that makes sense to me, right? Because half of what I do is on field. I'm kind of the Patrick Waugh of a fan. Like, I kind of get the stats and I like them, but everything that I do is based on my impression of something, which is almost always wrong at this point. So I appreciate where you're coming from.
It's almost kind of voodoo though. Cause every time I talk about a goaltender during a game, if I say, wow, look at him, he's killing it, he lets in like 4 more goals as soon as I say that. And he can have a rock solid game until I say that, and then he just tanks. So I try not to root for teams or root against teams during games anymore, because I'm so afraid of jinxing them that it's almost like forced me to become more objective, because I no longer have the joy of rooting for teams, because I cursed so many of them. it became a problem for a while, so now I just watch. But yeah, it's a I don't know. I still can't figure out why they let go of Pickard so easily, why they didn't pick him back up on waivers. But like I said, I have more faith in what Joe Sakic is doing. So he may be giving their goalie system a year with Bernier, who's not, you know, a project. He's not a young guy that you need to keep in the system for 5 or 6 years. He's giving a year or two to figure out where things are, what they look like, who should stay, who should go. so that he can make these decisions by himself and then move forward with a more cohesive system. And I may be completely wrong. You know, he may prove me very wrong and do something stupid, but that's the impression that I sort of get. So I'm not necessarily as upset about their, like, they definitely don't have a great goalie system right now. They don't have a great pipeline, but they aren't in the same level of hot water as teams like the Los Angeles Kings, who at one point last year, and this should make any Avs fan who listens feel better. At one point last year, the Kings lost Jonathan Quick, moved Jeff Zatkoff to be their starter. He got hurt, so they moved their AHL starter up and had so few people in their system that when their AHL starter became their NHL starter, they had to sign their AHL goalie coach's son to an amateur tryout contract to become their AHL starter. And then their goalie coach became their emergency backup goalie.
I remember something about this, and that's hilarious to me.
That's
bad. That's awesome at the same time, though. I love stories like that.
Oh, it was soup. And their goalie coach, I mean, the guy who did it, Dusty Amu, he's wonderful. They have a gem in him, and his son got the chance of a lifetime. But, like, that's a really bad prospect pipeline. The Avs are not at that point.
Well, then you get ex-Avs that come in and just kill the Avs, like Peter Budaj, amazing goalie all of a sudden. But I remember the Budaj years. They weren't great, you know?
Peter Budaj and, ironically enough, Dusty Amu, the guy who was their e-bug and is their goalie coach. He's worked quite a lot with Budaj over the last 2 or 3 years. And we'll see if he's able to maintain that in Tampa Bay. But when he was, because he was his coach in Winnipeg and in L.A., and he did some really good things with his game.
Yeah, when I think about Pickard, I think about Budaj, and it's probably going to be like that. And I just learned recently that that Pickard's brother is playing somewhere. I forget where, but he was a prospect or still is for some NHL team. It was just cool to see Chet's name pop up.
I feel like Chet Pickard's either playing overseas or something crazy like
that. I think so. I just don't remember where. But yeah, that was weird. I didn't know the whole family was in on it.
Yeah, I believe he was a first-round pick.
I think so. That's how I found him, was I was trying to figure out like how many first round picks actually panned out for the teams that got them. Cause it seems like nobody wants to touch the first round with a goalie. And that's where I started developing this idea that, you know, maybe what people are saying is a goalie, if a goalie's stealing a season four, you're getting you into the playoffs, then you have bigger problems up front and they're focusing more on the forwards and D, and the goalie is just not as big a deal as I once thought. Cause when I watch a game like anyone else, if a goalie steals, I'm like, he's the best thing ever. He's going to win us the cup.
I think that can be the case up to a certain point, but I think Montreal and New York are perfect examples of why you can have the best goalie in the world, because Henrik Lundqvist is the best goalie in the world.
You think over Carey Price?
Yes.
They're both very good.
May immediately be the best goalie, although he's struggling this year. But Henrik Lundqvist's numbers over the last decade, nobody's touched that level of consistency. He's been top five every year for a decade. And that's...
And meanwhile, a really interesting dude.
Oh, yeah. He's super fun. And it speaks volumes that his backups have gone on to. I mean, Cam Talbot managed to take a starting job in Edmonton. Antti Raanta's taking the starting job in Arizona. Like, clearly they're doing something right with their goalies there. They just don't have the defensive structure in front of it. And I just looked at Chet Pickard. Did not post a 900 save percentage in the AHL or ECHL. So he went overseas and he is absolutely crushing it in Germany right now. So,
I mean, I don't even know what the takeaway is from that other than it's really interesting, but it's just got to be, I guess, the level of play.
Let people assume what they want from that, but he's crushing it in Germany. He's got some elite numbers over there.
So, I kind of pegged this at an hour, and I don't want to take too much of your time, but I would love it if you gave me just something along the lines of a story on a mask that you think is really interesting. I had no idea that was kind of a thing for you, your sweet spot.
Ooh. So there have been a couple really good masks this year. There have been a couple really good personal story masks, but I think the best one this year is Malcolm Subban's. And he obviously, I mean, he was a first round draft pick for the Bruins, didn't really pan out there. He was the second of the three Subban brothers to get moved from his draft team. he got a Vegas Strong mask this year. And I think that's unbelievably cool of him. So he's got, I believe it's a David Gunnarsson mask. And he's, for people who are interested in looking up David Gunnarsson, he's one of the league's biggest mask artists.
I think all of our goalies have had a mask from him that I can remember.
He does all of Varlamov's masks, and I believe he does most of Bernier's as well. And Bernier has a lion on his mask, which is pretty cool. That's a cool story. He's a Leo. He's very into that, which you don't get from a lot of hockey players. So he's got a lion tattoo on himself. He's got a giant lion head on his mask because he's a Leo, which is, you know, it is what... Like you said, goalies are a breed all their own.
They really are. I know Pickard had a mask as well from David Art.
I believe you're right. He has a cool new one for...
Barra definitely did.
Who did?
Barra.
Oh, yeah. He does some really cool masks with him.
I follow him on Instagram. That's like one of the best accounts to follow, really.
Dave Art?
It's amazing because it's very much by hand. This guy has a lot of tech he could jump to, but he still kind of does it the old crafted way. Like, he is the Etsy of mask makers.
That's the best way to put it. Calvin Pickard just got his Toronto mask from Dave Art, and it's just like these overlapping classic Toronto Maple Leafs, and they're all like woven together and they become one leaf. It's very cool looking. But no, Malcolm Subban has it's the Vegas colors, but he doesn't have the Vegas Golden Knights written anywhere on it. It just says Vegas Strong in huge letters.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's he's a good guy. And
any hope for him?
I didn't like him with Boston, but he's doing a really good job in Vegas. So it may have just been, you know, Bob Essence has a good coach in Boston, but maybe he just wasn't the right coach for Malcolm Subban. I'm not sure. Another guy did a really good mask. Pekka Rinne has wild, crazy predator like sea creatures on his mask every year, but he also did a mask for Texas. So he basically auctioned his mask off for Hurricane Harvey.
That's pretty cool.
So, you know, little stories like that.
I like him. Any personality you can get, right? I almost wish the players could have like decorated helmets, but that's never happening.
That's one of the things that goalies love is, you know, a couple of them have said you don't get to show a lot of personality in hockey, but you get to basically show your life story, whatever you want to put on your mask. That, I mean, like Freddie Anderson's from Denmark. He always has a Lego on his mask leading up to this year. I think he took it off, but Lego is the big company out of Denmark. It's one of their few big success stories, and obviously Lego's huge.
I didn't know that at all. Now I have somebody to be mad at every time I step on a Lego.
Yeah.
yeah. Damn you, Denmark.
Lego is from Denmark. And so Freddie Anderson always has a little Lego character on, like, one of the little, what are they called? The minifigs. He has little minifigs on his mask, which is super cool. And Rito Barra loves to surf, and he's super excited that he's in Anaheim this year so he can surf all the time. So he has an iconic surf shop and a really fun beach in Anaheim as sort of a silhouette on his mask. Stuff like that. It's really cool every time I get one of the masks. And we do a lot of work with Sylvie Marcellet. I don't know if she does anything with Avs players, but she does a lot of really cool masks for Quebecois players in particular. And she sends us the stories of like how she came up with the design. And she'll be like, while she's typing, she's like, and then in the middle of the night, I woke up and I knew, and I ran to my like drawing board and I sketched out the mask and sent it to the player, and he loved it. So it's a lot of fun learning about that stuff.
That is a lot of fun. We're going to have to talk more about masks one day.
Absolutely.
I feel like the only move left, though, is somebody has to go complete white for a while just to reset everything, and then we can start building it back up. Because you have, I mean, everything you can think of, including the Ben Bishop glowing-in-the-dark mask, you know?
The Tron mask was really cool.
It was, but what I've learned, or what I think I know anyways from looking around a little bit, is I think the NHL has a little bit of a say in what can or can't be on a mask.
Teams do, because like the LA Kings, players cannot have color on their masks. They tried to create a purple Jeff Zadkoff mask this year, to sort of throw back to the Kings wearing purple, and the team nixed it.
What?
Yeah.
I have to go look now. I'm going to look up every goaltender from the Kings for the last 10 years. Are you sure?
I'm super positive.
All right. I trust you.
They do stuff with their pads too. You won't see certain pad designs in LA either.
Why are you so into goalies? How did this happen? Give me the quick version though, because like I said, I don't want to keep you forever.
I'm a goalie.
So that's how it all happened?
I liked writing about goalie style and like technique and goalie coaching, because that's what I thought I wanted to do, was on the ice stuff. But, you know, making extra money writing about the masks was at first just that. It was, you know, writing about the masks to make some money. And it's so cool learning about the masks, that like, how can you not fall in love with that? So every time they ask, do you want to do this mask piece for us? I'm like, yes, I do. Of course I do. Even though it's not having to do with the technique, which is what I initially wanted to spend more time specializing in.
And that, my friends, is the powerful Kat Silverman. Goalie, mother, reporter, overall awesome person. A huge thanks to Kat for taking the time to talk hockey and educate me and you on the goalie situation here in Colorado. Kat will always be on my Christmas card list for turning me on to quality save percentage. Be sure to check out our previous episode with AJ Hafley of the BSN Avalanche Network and podcast. And if you'd like to reach out to Kat, here's how you do it.
My Twitter handle is at Kat, C-A-T-M, Silverman, S-I-L-V-E-R-M-A-N. My DMs are always open. To warn them, please don't abuse it, because I will block you. But yeah, I leave my DMs open. So if people want to ask me a more in detail question but don't want people to see it, they can always send it directly to me. I try to answer everything that I'm asked.
How nice of you. Handing out DMs like that.
I try.
This and every other podcast that we do is brought to you by AvsFam, absfam.com. Awesome hockey shirts for awesome hockey people. Go check them out. You won't be disappointed. Stay awesome.